Whistleblowing is something that is probably more complicated than it seems. I would venture to say that most of us would like to believe that we would blow the whistle on waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality if put in the position to do so. We were all probably raised to tell the truth and to do the right thing. And I would say further that most of us would blow the whistle if the issue were the protection of our children, of babies. Why then did it take one special woman to do just that? She's our next guest. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Yasmine Motarjami is a food safety inspector and a noted whistleblower. She studied chemistry and biology at the Claude Bernard University in Lyon, France, and food industry techniques at the University of Montpellier before doing her PhD work in food technology at the University of Lund. She then worked as a research assistant at that same university. In 1990, Yasmine joined the World Health Organization in Geneva, where she became a scientific expert and director of food security and food aid. Beginning in the year 2000, she served as corporate food safety manager and assistant vice president responsible for food safety at the food giant Nestle. Her qualifications were impeccable. In 2003, following a complaint from parents, Yasmine proposed that the company withdraw from the market baby biscuits being manufactured by Nestle. And beginning in 2006, she called for an audit on the toxicity of baby products. In 2009, a large-scale food poisoning incident affected 300,000 babies in China, 13 of whom died. This was after eating Nestle baby biscuits. The director of the offending group at Nestle was promoted and became Yasmine's manager. He took away her responsibilities and relegated her to menial tasks, and in 2010, she was fired. In March 2011, she filed a complaint against Nestle with a local court in Switzerland for moral and psychological harassment. 9 years later, in 2020, the court finally found that she had indeed been harassed and intimidated. That was in what it called an insidious matter. Yasmine Motarjami joins us today. Welcome to the show, Yasmine. We're very happy to have you.
Thank you very much for your invitation. It's a pleasure.
What a story this is, Yasmine. You tried for years to do the right thing. For the most part, nobody would listen to you. And then when babies began dying, they fired you. Tell us how this whole thing started. What was it that first made you think that Nestle's baby biscuits were dangerous and could actually kill children?
Well, I have to say that my story has three periods. In the first 5 years, I noticed a lot of dysfunctions in food safety management, and I tried to improve the situation. The problem started at one of those persons, managers, who were responsible for some of those negligences, and that's the case of, for instance, baby biscuits, which I gave as an example, was promoted as my boss. And he started to retaliate against me. Now, the issue of the baby biscuit, which I have given as an example of violations, but it's by far not the only case of dysfunction and violations that I had experienced, was that basically consumers were complaining that their babies were suffocating and their baby became blue, red, and they had to turn the child upside down to get the biscuits out of their throat, and their child was suffocating. So with these consumer complaints, of course, I asked that the product to be recalled or the age of consumption to be increased. But by protesting against this case, I was exposing a manager who was negligent and was knowing that children were suffocating while putting the product on the market. So in 2006, that's the second period of my life with Nestle, he became the director of quality management in the head office where I was working as the head of food safety, and he became my boss, and he started to retaliate. as part of retaliation, he started to humiliate me, isolate me, bully me, harass me. But not only that, he sabotaged my work. He prevented me from doing my job. And he gave also wrong instructions, false instructions. And these false instructions led to some other problems. And during this second period of my life with Nestle, I started to blow the whistle internally with the top management. And I did this for 4 years with the same tempo as they were harassing me. I was reporting to the top management what was going on. And the top management closed their eyes. They just ignored my reporting. Instead, they participated and they supported in my harassment and bullying. I should also tell you that in Switzerland, dismissal is very easy. Just you have to give 3 months' salary and you can dismiss anyone. So Nestle could have dismissed me if they didn't like my approach to food safety management, but they didn't. They decided to harass me, to destroy me mentally, and to destroy my career and discredit me particularly. And then at the end, when there were several incidents which was happening for which I had warned before, the management became more and more guilty of negligence. So the harassment continued to increase. And it finished with a fake investigation into my harassment. They refused to audit for food safety. And I found this to be unacceptable that they would refuse to audit our operations for food safety. And I asked them to fire me, and they did. And this was the end of my second period. That was after 10 years I was fired. And then the third period was when I started the lawsuit against Nestle. And this period lasted 12 years. I was fighting Nestle for 12 years in court. And during this period, they also sued back. I had several courts, and there was a long fight in court. And finally, this year in 2023, I won against Nestle, and the court condemned Nestle for an intensive and long harassment which destroyed my career. They also recognized that they made a fake investigation and they did not follow up my whistleblowing reports, and that the top management of Nestle, that means the CEO, the corporate governance, and the compliance manager, they were all part of the scheme of harassment.
Why do you think it was that the company did not pay attention to your warnings? Was it that they were more worried about the bottom line? Were there not safeguards in place to make sure that something like this didn't happen? What was it?
Well, in principle, there was on paper safeguard measures, because we had the code of business conduct, which was saying that staff should be reporting anything wrong that they see. They were saying this orally too. And this was a system which was set up after the Enron case. So on paper, we had a system. But the system has its limitations. That means if I would report that some colleagues are stealing products, they will perhaps follow up on my whistleblowing. But when someone is reporting on misdoing of a superior, a top manager who is protected, then they will not follow up, even if the life of consumer is at stake. And I should also say there is, of course, the bottom line, but more important than the bottom line is their own bonus, because in 2005, that means a month, in December 2005, a month before all my trouble starts, in January 2006, Nestle top management had linked bonuses to product withdrawal. That means if you withdraw products, you will get less bonus. So this is what this is what caused that we had a major outbreak of food poisoning in China in 2008, where 300,000 babies got intoxicated with melamine. You should know that a year before, Nestle had a similar incident in the United States, where pets were intoxicated with pet food, which was contaminated with melamine. So Nestle knew that there was the risk of melamine contamination with raw material in China, because in the pet food incidents, the raw material was coming from China. So Nestle knew, and I had issued an instruction that we should be monitoring our raw material for any emerging contaminant, which melamine was, but they didn't. They refused to do it. As a result, a year later, they got into another intoxication, this time with infant formula in China, where infant formula were contaminated with melamine, and they had to withdraw from their market. Nestle claimed that their contamination was not high level to a point that would cause intoxication, and they imputed the intoxication to another company, Sanlu. But I have evidence there was an internal email which was saying that Nestle products were also highly contaminated. So what happened, how Nestle hide this contamination, I don't know, because there was no proper investigation into Nestle products. At that time, I was already blowing the whistle. It was 3 years that I was blowing the whistle. And the year after this incident, we had another incident in the United States where 77 people got ill with E. coli 0157, which is a killing bacteria. And again, I had been blowing the whistle for 3 years before this incident. And 3 months before that, I had been seeing the director of operation and asking for an audit of our operations, and he just refused. And nevertheless, they made a fake investigation into my harassment, and they dismissed me right after that.
Yasmin, we hear a lot from people on this show that the atmosphere for whistleblowers in Switzerland is difficult. We hear that many Swiss companies are not punished for violating the law, even after the whistleblower's revelations. What happened to Nestle after you went public? And did anything change once the court found in your favor all those years later?
First, I answered the second question. Nothing changed with Nestle. The proof is that that's just last year, Nestle had another incident with their pizza where the same error as in the incident of E. coli United States in 2009 was repeated in this incident. That means the flour was contaminated, and they didn't do anything, and they didn't even listen to employees who were reporting a lack of hygiene in the factory. And in this incident, which happened last year, two children died and 53 others got severely ill, perhaps for life.
We're speaking with whistleblower Yasmin Mutarjami about her revelations that baby biscuits manufactured by Nestle resulted in the sickening of 300,000 children and the deaths of 13 of them in China. Thank you, Yasmin. Stay right there. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the current environment for whistleblowers in Europe. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Yasmin Mutarjami about her whistleblowing in the food industry and the protection of children. Good to have you with us, Yasmin. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Yasmin, I'd like to ask you about your court case, which you filed in the Swiss canton of Vaud. The court condemned Nestle Group for failing to protect you when you made your revelations. One of the things that came up in the media when you won that case was that the Swiss Parliament had really done nothing substantive to protect whistleblowers in the country. We hear the same thing about the Swiss banking industry. What can you tell us about changes that may have been made to protect whistleblowers?
No, even though I have been writing to authorities time and again, they just ignore. And I would say it's even worse because, as you know, there is a International Labour Organization has established a convention against bullying and harassment at work, violence at work. And Switzerland is the only country who is refusing to ratify this convention. So they are definitely not willing to protect whistleblowers. And worse than this, in Switzerland, harassment and bullying of employees or whistleblowers is tolerated, is allowed.
I'm wondering, too, if Nestle eventually addressed the problems that you revealed with your whistleblowing. Children died because of the toxicity in the baby biscuits. What changes did the company make after you blew the whistle? Did they correct the situation finally? And what happened with the families of the children?
Well, but there were several stories. You know, there were babies who suffocated with the biscuits, but because these babies were very small, 8 months old, the parents were next to them and could take out the biscuits, so they didn't die. These babies didn't die, and so basically, the parents didn't do much except. Except complaining to the company. On the other hand, there were some babies who died of choking, the same problem, but with another product. And some of them complained to court, went to court in France, and they also won their case, but the compensation that they received was very, very little. It was basically almost nothing, $100,000, equivalent of $100,000. And what you should notice is that it was several children who died, and each time Nestle didn't change, didn't learn any lesson, didn't change their product. So a year later, another child, a year later, another child died. And each time they say, no, we are okay, we have done nothing wrong, is the fault of the parents and children. This is the same as in China, where they were putting products on the market, infant formula on the market, in violations of regulatory norm of China. When I reported the case to the court in Switzerland, the reply of Nestle was that this is the fault of regulatory authorities that they didn't have the right regulations. We have done nothing wrong.
After Nestle fired you, wrongly, I might add, and you filed your court case, you became something of a media personality. How did that affect your ability to find work? Was the situation difficult for you? What did you end up having to do to put food on the table or to pay your bills?
Well, first of all, I should tell you that I was totally traumatized, absolutely traumatized, because my work was my passion, and I was really believing in my work. And it was not only that the top management did nothing, but my colleagues also kept silent. And this shocked me tremendously. And I could not even hear anymore the word food safety. I was very traumatized and depressed by this experience. I couldn't even think of working anywhere else because if Nestle is like this, how is it elsewhere? So that was my feeling. But I had to apply for other jobs, and I did. I tried to apply for jobs outside of my field. But there was something else which was happening. First of all, Nestle had blacklisted me, and they had also told me this, that you will never get any more job in this field. The second thing, they had also motivated my dismissal by the fact that I had a difference of opinion with my boss. So, of course, wherever I would go, they would say, okay, they would always think that Nestle is doing, because Nestle is the bigger, the powerful company, so they are right, and perhaps my ideas are wrong. So with this statement, nobody would believe that I was competent and was doing my job properly. So basically, I looked for a job for 4 years. I didn't get any job. For the first 2 years, I had unemployment, which helped me to survive. After that, I borrowed from my retirement fund. That means I had saved money for my retirement, and I lived with that, and with the minimum of expenses that I could manage. I lived with that, and I borrowed a little bit from my family. And that's it. So that's how I survived, spending as little as I could and using my retirement fund.
Yasmin, after your whistleblowing and court case, you were honored by many different organizations for what you had done. What work are you doing now, and what advice would you give other whistleblowers facing the same challenges that you faced?
Well, after that, I was dismissed. In order to prove the world that I am competent and what is my vision and food safety, because Nestle was actually attacking my credibility. So I went and I published several books, an encyclopedia and books on how food safety should be managed. So I basically put all my experience on, in books. So for several years, I just continued published articles and sharing my experience with the world, whether in food safety management or in whistleblowing or in areas of justice, or writing letters to authorities in order to raise their awareness. So basically, for the last 12 years, been doing this work. My books... got award in the United States, and my encyclopedia and my books are being republished right now. So this is the work which I did, plus advising other whistleblowers, that means coaching other people in this path. Well, my advice to whistleblowers, I usually listen to them and I evaluate their case. I evaluate each case based on their situation. That means whether whistleblowing is their duty, like it was mine. I was the corporate food safety manager. I was responsible to blow the whistle. I was responsible to report. So the first thing I will look is that, are they responsible for blowing the whistle or not? Like an auditor, a compliance manager, a food safety manager, they are responsible to blow the whistle. Otherwise, they will be liable. The second, I will look whether they have a family, children, and if they have the potential to find another job, and how motivated they are to experience this persecution that they will have to go through later on. Whether they are supported by their family, what is their age, what is the resources, can they survive if they don't find a job. So I will look at a number of criteria, and based on that, I will give them advice what they should do, reminding them that their first responsibility is towards their family and children, particularly in an environment that society is not supporting whistleblowers.
I'd like to thank our guest, Yasmin Motarjami, for joining us today and for sharing her story. And I'd like to thank our viewers. This is a show about whistleblowing, but sometimes the issue of whistleblowing overlaps with something even more important, protecting our children. They're the most vulnerable of all of us. They should be loved and taken care of physically and mentally. They should not be subject to illness, even death, just because adults don't want to do their jobs. Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.